Great. Thanks, Gus. So first, let me say I'm presenting on behalf of Dr. Samir Hanna and a number of other of our EPI folks and lab staff that work on NARMS and our salmonella surveillance in Tennessee. So I'll do my best to represent them. So we're going to talk about a comparison, as Gus said, of antimicrobial-resistant non-typhoidal salmonella from our human isolates and retail food isolates. So it's been interesting to hear the HAI perspective and the increased activity around surveillance for CRE, and these particular surveillance systems have been going on for about 15 years with the NARMS enteric bacteria activity with CDC. So we began to do some cross-sectional analysis, kind of some ecological analyses of these data. So we know that resistant non-typhoidal salmonella is a priority. It's been identified as such in the 2013 CDC threat report and as a component of CARB with the president's initiative. There's growing concern about resistance to clinically important antimicrobials with salmonella. And we also know that food animals serve as a source of resistant non-typhoidal salmonella that infect humans through the food chain. So we compare these two sources of data to hopefully inform some of our activities going forward. There's a lot happening on the front of judicious use and stewardship in the animal area through FDA. So our methods, we participate in two arms of the NARMS project activity, one being the human component, where we submit every 20th isolate to CDC for testing. The other is the retail meat component, where we submit all non-typhoidal salmonella isolated from retail meat in our state. That we sample chicken, turkey, pork, and beef. The methods are standardized at CDC and FDA using broth microdilution for 14 antimicrobial agents from 8 different classes and are characterized according to CLSI and NARMS guidelines. Dr. Hanna did this analysis in EPI Info 7. So these are kind of the questions that we looked at, just the basic characteristics of the human cases with the resistant non-typhoidal salmonella infection. We also wanted to look at the rate of infection of various retail meats in Tennessee compared to national data for NARMS. We looked at the varying serotypes, and when we say salmonella, we're using a blanket term, but we're talking about 2,500 to 3,000 different serotypes of salmonella that exist. We also want to look at resistance patterns among non-typhoidal salmonella isolates and compare them with human versus retail meat. And then lastly, look at these data through a lens of what we were seeing in terms of clinically important antimicrobials. So we'll address each one of these questions in the next few slides. So just broad strokes, in these 4 years, there were 179 non-typhoidal human isolates submitted statewide. Again, remembering that's a 1 in 20 sample of our human cases submitted for NARMS testing. There were 76 non-typhoidal salmonella retail meat isolates from 4 counties. So we don't conduct that retail food sampling statewide. It's done in the Nashville metropolitan area and the Knoxville metropolitan area nearby our state labs. Okay, so what were the characteristics of humans with resistant non-typhoidal salmonella infection? There were actually 22 that had resistance evident. About two-thirds of those were in adults. Specimen source was interesting to us. Most were from stool, about three-quarters, 18% from urine, and one invasive bloodstream infection with the Salmonella Dublin isolate. Our eastern sample area, a large part of the state is rural, so when we looked at rurality, we didn't see much difference between resistant isolates coming from metropolitan versus rural areas. So what about the rate of retail meat contamination in Tennessee? And I guess this is probably not the best right before lunch. So you'll notice that on the y-axis, it goes from 0 to 16%. So in Tennessee, the retail chicken was about 7% contaminated, about 6% for ground turkey. Ground meat is beef, relatively clean compared to the other meat types, and as was pork. It's interesting for us to note that from a national perspective, those sites that participate in the NARMS enterobacteria retail meat sampling, that our rates were lower. But it's a good bet when you buy chicken or turkey from the grocery store that it is contaminated with salmonella. So what about serotypes identified in humans and retail meat? So bear with me on this slide. It's a little bit busy, but let's just first start by looking at the human isolates. And on the y-axis here, we have various serotypes of salmonella that have been identified in these two surveillance systems. The blue bars, you'll see with the legend, on the top is the humans. So that's the total number of isolates identified over this four-year period in the NARMS human sampling. And you'll see an interesting thing at the bottom. So let's start at the bottom. The most common type identified in humans is Salmonella typhimurium, and going up, Enteritidis Newport Javiana, which maybe that should be no surprise because that's what we see nationally. It's what we see in FoodNet. Those are the four most common serotypes of Salmonella that we see, but a variety of other serotypes, Borrelia, Infantis, Mississippi, and you see a few scattered all the way to the top with various Salmonella serotypes from humans. So if we look at chicken breast and those 34 isolates from the retail food sampling, the most common type was also typhimurium, identified from chicken, followed by Enteritidis. And we'll just look where the blue and red are together now, where there's commonality between human and the chicken isolates. The 4512I-, which is actually a monophasic typhimurium, Infantis, Thompson, Heidelberg, which our friends out west are really familiar with. And then you'll notice Kentucky at the top. Kentucky is something we don't see very commonly in humans, but a very common isolate of chickens. If we look at ground turkey, we also see some overlap with human isolates, Salmonella Newport, Schwarzengrund, Heidelberg, Bredney, and St. Paul. The anatum and infantis, as we go down to ground beef, there are actually only two isolates from ground beef. So one anatum, one infantis. And with pork, we also see some overlap with human serotypes. Typhimurium overlaps with human and chicken. And then Derby, we did not see any human isolates, but it is a more common serotype in swine. The other thing to highlight on the slide, those with asterisks beside them, again, I apologize, it's a busy slide, but those are the serotypes that showed resistance in humans. So typhimurium, Enteritidis, starting at the bottom, 4512I-, Infantis, Mississippi, Heidelberg, Anatum, Dublin, Litchfield, Uganda, and Berta. So what about resistance patterns among non-typhoidal isolates from humans in retail meats? So again, this is the entire number of isolates. And there's some interesting things about these individual pie charts. So let's first look at the human isolates. You see that the vast majority, about 88%, were pan-susceptible. That's maybe not unexpected. In Tennessee, we have a large number of Salmonella Newport and Salmonella Javiana in particular parts of our state that we think are environmental isolates. There's probably some environmental reservoir that people become infected through contact with animals or their environment, and there's not antimicrobial selection pressure on those isolates. But there is resistance demonstrated to one or two classes, three, four, and greater than or equal to five classes amongst the human isolates in Tennessee. We'll go to the ground beef because that's less interesting. Those were both, all two of them, were both pan-susceptible. And then let's look at the pork chops the sampling that was done. There are some isolates, about a fourth, that were pan-susceptible. But we did have isolates with resistance to three classes and resistance to one or two classes. The chicken and turkey becomes more interesting in terms of the amount of resistance amongst those isolates. Looking at the chicken breasts, 38% were pan-susceptible, but an increasing number showed resistance to multiple classes of antimicrobials, 1 to 2 classes, 3 classes, 12%, and greater than or equal to 5 classes of antimicrobials, and 6% of the chicken isolates. Turkey is even more interesting than that. So a very small proportion, 16%, were pan-susceptible. Resistance to at least 1 to 2 classes in about 40% of the isolates. And then 3 classes, 16%, 4 classes, 13%, and greater than or equal to 5 classes, 16% of the isolates. So a lot of resistance within ground turkey. So what about resistance to clinically important antimicrobials? ACSUT is ampicillin, chloramphenicol, streptomycin, sulfamethoxazole, tetracycline, so it's that DT104 phenotype that about a decade ago we were very concerned about in ruminant animals, and we've seen it plunge, not only in animals but in humans. It's decreasing. So what we saw in looking at these 4 years of data, there was still some DT104, all in typhimurine, which was the primary serotype that we've seen over the years. So 4 isolates that showed that resistance pattern, but none in retail chicken and only 1 in ground turkey, which the note below indicates that that isolate not only had that DT104 resistance profile, but also had multiple resistance, including ceftriaxone resistance. So those that included ceftriaxone, Salmonella Dublin, that was the bloodstream infection that I mentioned earlier. There's an analog for ceftriaxone in the veterinary world called ceftiofur. They're both third-generation cephalosporins, basically the same antimicrobial. In retail chicken, there were 2 isolates that were ceftriaxone resistant. They were both Salmonella typhimurium. And in ground turkey, there were 5, so 16% of the ground turkey isolates were ceftriaxone resistant. So fluoroquinolones are certainly an important drug in the human world. They've been an important drug in the animal world as well. So for those isolates where we saw at least Cipro resistance, there were 2 in humans. Salmonella Litchfield and Salmonella typhimurium were those serotypes, but none in retail chicken or ground turkey. So this looks at the resistance to clinically important antibiotics among non-typhoidal salmonella from humans, those same 4 years, but compares it to national data and regroups the resistance to greater than or equal to 5 classes. So from the previous slide, we saw ceftriaxone resistance in less than 1% of our isolates from humans, about 1% with ciprofloxacin, and 3.4%. So we're a little lower nationally than what we've seen nationally according to the antimicrobial threat report from CDC in 2013. Okay, so what can we say about these data, this kind of ecologic comparison between the human and the food isolates? Well, we did not have a lot of invasive bloodstream infections that we saw. The retail chicken and turkey were substantially contaminated, but lower rates in Tennessee than what we've seen in other sites in NARMS. And we don't really know how to explain that, but that is the case. There are very diverse serotypes that infect humans, including at least 10 with resistance to 1 antimicrobial class. There's a diversity of serotypes that we see in chicken and turkey, and it's much greater than we see with beef and pork, where we don't have much contamination. And the chicken and turkey serotypes were similar and had overlap with human non-typhoidal salmonella isolates during that 4-year period. We did have clinically important antimicrobial resistance present in the human isolates and some in those chicken and turkey isolates as well. And ceftriaxone is a big concern based on our data, the resistance amongst turkey isolates. So where are we going in the future? Gus had his train tracks up there, and all of this is isolate based, and we'll continue to receive isolates, and in Tennessee they're required to be sent to the state public health laboratory. We're most excited, I think, in the upcoming funding cycle through ELC to begin to be able to test more of our isolates instead of 1 in 20, test 100% of the isolates utilizing whole genome sequencing as the mechanism to do that. We also have increased this year the number of retail food samples tested in NARMS. It's doubled because of the AR monies. So I think it's important that we continue to try to coordinate and look have an integrated food chain surveillance perspective. Other people do this much better than we do, like in Denmark, where they look at isolates from the animal population, those at retail food, and those in the human population. It's helpful for attribution. It's helpful to drive change in the use of antimicrobials. So there's a number of folks to thank, the CDC NARMS team, certainly the folks in our state public health lab in Nashville and in Knoxville, FDA, who now funds the NARMS retail food activity, and then our state EPI and a number of folks in our group, including Dr. Hannah, who put this presentation together. All right, I'm glad to take questions.
Any questions? Maybe I can start off. We should all move to Tennessee. That's maybe one message. You've got low rates of contamination. I know you can't probably infer causality from the NARMS data, but I was struck that there were very few hamburger-related serotypes in the human infections or ground beef in the human infections. Yet when you looked at the antimicrobial resistance data, there were very few resistant infections in humans, but you saw the resistance in the chicken and turkey. So I'm not sure how to make sense of that. I guess you can't really say that transmission in these individuals occurred from the food source in question. But it does seem like there's you're seeing very few resistant infections in human, yet it's very high in chicken and turkey. So yeah. Maybe the infections are coming from someplace else.
Well, and that's something we want to look at. And certainly the discussions this morning in your presentation and Marion's and Heather's, there's actually a lot of talk about attribution in that world of HAI, talking about facility attribution for infections. And one of the things that we want to do is be able to look at some of these analyses are ongoing with PFGE, molecular subtyping data, and we hope with whole genome sequencing we'll have even greater power to look at attribution of those human infections to their source, right. From chicken or turkey or whatever the source might be.
Right. Hi, this is Zins Beldaus from Oregon, and yeah, I was just kind of curious with the turkey, why do they have more resistance? I mean, do you have any data in terms of that?
Well, I don't necessarily know about the animal production area, but I think there are a lot more antimicrobials used in turkey, including ceftiofur, just from an animal husbandry perspective. So that's something that is being looked at very closely. And some of the changes that are coming through FDA, like the FDA feed directive, for example, which requires a prescription to feed antimicrobials to different species. We hope we'll have some effect in terms of reducing resistance levels overall in some of those populations. And some changes have been made previously in some species, like chickens, for example, where fluoroquinolones were banned for use. So that's an important component, important question around this idea of clinically important antimicrobials. And when we identify them in a certain segment of animal agriculture, to look at that more closely and perhaps legislate or make rule changes that prevent the use of those important antimicrobials.